Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
74.
Here's John Williams.
Did the man say 74 on the radio in sunshine downtown at the lake?
74, I did.
Lord, have mercy. This is as good as it gets. The weather is. I'll try and measure up. This is John Williams. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio until 3. Remember, from 2:30 to 3 o'clock, we'll do something we call the bright side. In that last half hour, you'll call in or text in. Tell us some good news in your world, why you are smiling, and we'll smile with you. It's a group hug on the radio that starts your weekend, and it works every single time. We do it on Fridays. Heck, if every single person texted and called in at 2:40 and said, 74 and sunny, well, that would be worth it to me. But you tell me what's making you smile. That's how we end the show. I don't know if you've heard that segment before, but we hear the most amazing things. You hear from the people who say the glass is half empty or half full. I mean, but it's both, right? And so they say, well, I just had a terrible thing happen to me, but we lived. And then some people have little things that are very small. You know, they discovered a new ice cream flavor at the store and they enjoy it. My bright side, maybe I had 3 ice cream sandwiches last night. Dang, I love those things. It's ice cream sandwich season. But it may be something more profound. Whatever it is that's making you smile, we want to hear that at 2:40. By the way, last night I had a dream. I had a dream that I want to share with you now. And tell me if you've ever had a dream like this. It goes like this. And I know you've had a dream like this. I'm backstage at a play. I have a small part at the end of the play. I'm about to go on, and I have not memorized my lines. And I'm really nervous about this because I've got to go out there. I find a copy of the script, and I'm sort of kicking myself, like, how did I let myself get into this position? Why didn't I read the script before the play is being performed? And it's a big, beautiful venue in Chicago. There's thousands of people out there. This is no local high school production. This is a big deal, and I've got kind of a cameo at the end. It's a small part, but I have several lines, and I've got to walk out onto the stage, and I do not know my lines. But I find a copy of the script. And now I'm looking at it, and I thought, well, I could memorize these lines. I'll memorize my lines. But then it dawns on me that I actually need to memorize the other lines of the people that will say them to me because I need to know what my cues are. I need to know the story. And then I thought, well, why haven't we rehearsed this? I should have taken the time to go over this with other people. I've never even said these words out loud, and I'm not even a good actor. I'm really stressing about that. And then I get distracted, and now I can't find the script. And I find myself walking down long corridors on the perimeter of the stage, and I'm worried that I'll even get backstage in time to walk on, and what will I do when I walk on stage? And then it dawned on me. This is a dream. This is a dream. I'm dreaming, and it's not this bad, because this is one of those moments where you fear in life, but you dream about it doesn't really happen. So I thought I was out of jail. I've never had the wherewithal to realize in a dream that I was dreaming, and that felt pretty liberating until then. This really happened to me. I don't know if this ever happened to you, Lauren, but then this happens to me. Then I think, right, I'm dreaming, but no, I'm not. This is your worst nightmare. And I kind of thought, okay, am I dreaming or is this real? And I determined that, in fact, this really is happening.
That always happens when you're trying to wake yourself up. And since you can't wake up, you're like, okay, yeah, well, oh no, it must be real.
That's where I was. And so then I thought I had figured it out. And then I convinced myself that, no, actually, John, you are backstage at a major production and you have forgotten to go to rehearsals and you haven't memorized the lines. And this is that bad. And it was such a horrible feeling. And then I woke up.
That's the one I have about classes, college classes. All of a sudden, I never went to a class all year.
And it's the final.
Yeah.
And you're showing up and you go, oh, shoot, I didn't go to class.
I've also had work, television work dreams where I'm out on a remote somewhere and I'm supposed to be doing a live shot. And they're like, we need you to do the weather, too. And I was like, I've never learned the weather.
But then, and then if that dream for you was like mine was last night, then you would say to yourself in the dream, wait a minute, it's a dream. Oh, thank God, I'm just dreaming, so I don't have to worry about this. And then I had yet another sort of revelation in the dream, and that is, no, it's not a dream. This is really happening. You are about to do the weather, John, and you've never done the weather. Or you're about to walk on stage, and in fact, you haven't memorized the lines. And that was just back to square one, the worst feeling.
Yeah, it's cruel of our brains to do that to us.
I know. What person can we get a, I don't know, anthropological psychologist online or somebody who studies the human species? What value does that have?
I actually recently had a dream that I missed the whole Thomas Jefferson show, that I slept through it.
Right. There you were. You're supposed to walk on stage and introduce me at the Tivoli Theater, and you forgot. You slept through this thing. Ugh.
And that's something I would never, ever do, knock on wood.
My view about dreams is that they aren't all that revelatory. Because, you know, I think you could say, well, that means this, or I dreamed this because of that. I know that. But mostly I think dreams are this. We have millions of thoughts and experiences over the course of our day, week, our lives, and it's all in there in our brain. And when we kind of shut her down at night, your brain just starts putting things away. All right, this is going to go there. This is going to there. What do we do with this thought, this recollection? And it sort of plays out as a disjointed but somewhat relevant narrative, but it's not meaningful. It's not telling you anything you don't know. Yeah, you had to do the Jefferson show. Yeah, where you were worried a little bit about performing and being on time, but you were on time. So what does this dream tell you? Not much. And I think we could spend a lot of money trying to figure out our dreams when I think they're very surface oriented. And it's just your brain picking up this garbage on the floor and putting it in boxes on shelves and everything's going away.
You know how I imagine it? Mm. The brain at night just goes, ooh, she had a conversation that lasted two sentences about this horror movie. I'm going to use that.
I don't know. It's complicated.
That is what happens, isn't it?
Right.
I've had a dream that someone had a baby that was half squirrel and I was doing a report on it. I can't recall anything that I would have seen that would prompt that.
I know that. But then all right, so take that dream and they say, well, this means that you want to be a mother someday or you're fearful of your job or squirrels represent something in the world. I go, no, they don't. This is just your reporter. And babies and squirrels have populated your life, and your brain's just picking stuff up, and to put the squirrel next to the baby, and that's all it is. That's all it is. Don't torture yourself with the meaning, or don't say, predicate certain actions based on the dream. Don't do that. Just have your dream, wake up and go, whew, glad I didn't walk on stage naked, because I was about to.
I've never had a dream like that before, but they always act like...
Oh, God, I have the naked dream all the time.
Oh, my God.
I'm always like, oh, this is... How did I do this? It's the same feeling I have when I was about to go on stage, not having memorized the lines. And I think, oh, gee, I need a tissue or a towel or something. This is so... How did I do this?
I just got a really funny text from Ryan in the newsroom, Ryan Burrow.
Who works here.
Yeah. I had a dream that ice cream came out of my cell phone last night.
See, so what does that mean? Maybe
he's
it means something about his job and it's a cold, hard world that he's covering. No, he had some ice cream. He owns a phone. The brain just said, here's the phone, there's the ice cream. Ice cream out of phone. End of story. The nude one does worry me a little bit, though, because what's that all about? I'm very seldom nude in public.
Yeah, there are a lot of similar dreams that people have that I would think mean something, or people that have reoccurring dreams. I have a lot of dreams involving plane crashes.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but it probably means something.
That's horrifying.
Yeah, I have dreams. I go through spans, but some of them have been fantastically violent, physical violence, you know, hitting people or people hitting me, but just a lot of violent dreams. And I don't know what all that means, but I don't. I think if I sat down, somebody could explain it to me, and I'd go, yeah, whatever.
It's about the subconscious, what you're thinking about that you lay away.
Yeah, right. I mean, there are people probably I did want to punch in the nose, and I'm sure some people have wanted to punch me. But that's my general. That's where I come away with most dream analysis. You know, I think when I hear or read, because I've looked up this stuff a little bit too, and when I see the dream analysis, I think, well, I could have told you that. You know, it's a violent world, and you're worried about this, and blah blah blah. At least that's where I am on some of those things. At 1:35, we're going to visit with a guy who is the producer, one of the producers of this 16 Shots documentary about the death of Laquan McDonald and the trial of Jason Van Dyke. Didn't happen that long ago, but it does seem in a way like a distant memory, doesn't it? And when you watch it told, as I mentioned to Steve Bertrand, as a 90-minute Showtime documentary, the cinematography, the storytelling, the access they got to some of the players is really surprising. And it's worth a view, and I think maybe a listen for our 10-15 minute conversation we're going to have, just to make sure you and I got this right. So what happened again? And there's two things I'm going to play for you in the next half hour that I don't remember the first time this happened, and I'm kind of gobsmacked by it all. Gobsmacked by it all. Let me take a break. When we come back, I want to just catch you up on one other little thing too. And that is a little education for you and me about what is and is not legal if you're running for city council, or if you're running for state representative or Congress, or if you're running for president of the United States. If somebody says, hey, I've got some information on your opponent, there are some very specific rules that apply, and I didn't know this. But we all got an education this week when the president told George Stephanopoulos that if he did get some what he characterized as opposition research from a foreign national, he would use it and maybe turn it over to the FBI. The head of the Federal Election Commission is a very interesting lady appointed by George Bush in 2002. She's a Yalee with her degree from Harvard, and she spent most of her career studying, talking about, and working in the business of election ethics and law. She is really the best person the country has on this. And the FEC chair said something very interesting to me this week about what the president said. So then the president called in and for about an hour talked in on Fox and Friends. And on Fox and Friends, he sort of clarified what he meant. So three little pieces of audio for you and I to listen to and learn. It's a very interesting story told this week, and it comes up next on WGN. Before we play those three sound clips we said about that odd little story about elections this week, Sarah just walked into the studio. Hey, what's going on?
Hey, John. I just got back from Springfield at the Illinois Broadcasters Association Awards, and I've got some folks to congratulate, including you and the Mincing Rascals.
Whoop, 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 whoop. This is the IBA Awards, the Illinois Broadcasters Association. Where was that, in Springfield?
It was. John and the Mincing Rascals won for Best Use of Non-Broadcast Media, so essentially a podcast.
Oh, so best podcast in the state of Illinois.
Yes.
Mincing Rascals. Whoop, 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 whoop.
And we had a few other people to congratulate. Brian Burrow for Best News Reporter, Steve Grzanich and Bennett Wakenight for a feature they did on The Opening Bell, for Best Radio Light Feature, and also Nick DiGilio Show for Best Radio Personality.
Best Radio Personality in Illinois, our own Nick DiGilio.
Indeed. And we'll give some shout-outs to Dave Ennett and the Bill and Wendy Show, who got some honorable mentions. And last but not least, your WGN Radio clinched Station of the Year for 2019. So we're super excited about that. I got to give a little acceptance speech, and it was lots of fun.
Well, congratulations to Todd Manley, our boss, and everybody down below, because the station won, and sports won, news won, podcasts won, all the things we do. It sounds like we're recognized as best in Illinois by the IBA. I'm not surprised.
Well, and people kept giving me side eye. They're like, "You're going up there quite a bit to accept many awards." So,
well, and you coordinate so many things for the station, and I think everybody has a hand in all of this. Certainly, the Station of the Year stuff. So, kudos to us, and thank you for representing us.
Thank
so well.
You. Congrats.
So let's do this now. This is George Stephanopoulos talking to the president. He had a couple of days, I guess, of interviews. And they talked about a variety of things. One of them was Stephanopoulos' question to the president about would he accept dirt from some foreign national this time around.
your campaign this time around, if foreigners, if Russia, if China, if someone else offers you information on an opponent, should they accept it or should they call the FBI?
I think maybe you do both. I think you might want to listen. I don't, there's nothing wrong with listening. If somebody called from a country, Norway, we have information on your opponent. Oh, I think I'd want to hear it.
You want that kind of interference in our elections?
It's not an interference. They have information. I think I'd take it. If I thought there was something wrong, I'd go maybe to the FBI if I thought there was something wrong. But when somebody comes up with OPPO research, right, they come up with OPPO research. Oh, let's call the FBI. The FBI doesn't have enough agents to take care of it. But you go and talk honestly to congressmen. They all do it. They always have. And that's the way it is. It's called OPPO research.
The president says this is not unusual. I think he was referring to opposition research, but opposition research from foreign nationals. It was one of the questions that many of the cast members on Morning Joe had when they were talking to the woman who is in charge of the FEC. Her name is Ellen Weintraub, a career bureaucrat who was appointed by Bush and has looked into ethics law election law and election ethics for much of her career. So she's the FEC chair. She sat down. In fact, she put out a tweet this week saying, I don't think I have to explain it. I'm surprised that I do, but you can't do that. This is part of her conversation on Morning Joe.
There seemed to be a little bit of confusion on this point, which confused me because it's actually a matter of black letter law. Mm-hmm. It's pretty straightforward. Anyone in the United States is not allowed to accept anything of value from a foreign national, particularly a foreign government,
right,
in connection with an election, federal, state, local, any election in the United States. And I think everyone in government should be speaking with one voice on this. This is not a partisan issue. The foreign governments who we have seen very bad actions from in the past are not likely to cease their efforts going forward unless the entire American government speaks with one voice and says this is intolerable, this is unacceptable, we're not going to put up with it.
I want to ask you about the idea of anything of value from a foreign national, because some have viewed that as something monetary or some business deal. What about information? If someone reached out to a candidate and said, for example, I have dirt on one of your opponents, would that be considered something of value?
Well, we would have to consider that if it were to come before us in an enforcement action. We would have to evaluate what the value of the information was.
And are you, like the FBI director, particularly concerned about the efforts of that same country, which is Russia, to try to do in 2020 again what they did try to do, according to the intelligence services, in 2016?
Absolutely. And they're working on other things, I'm sure. What happened in 2016 is we shouldn't expect the same playbook to be used as is in 20.
She also pointed out to the assembled on Morning Joe that this applies to state, local, and federal elections. It doesn't matter the office. If a foreign national says for dog catcher, I've got information, then you are not allowed to use it. It is against the law. Same goes for super PACs. Say you're not the candidate, but you're just putting money together and making commercials for the candidate. If you get information from foreigners, that's against the law, too. So the president called in on Morning Joe to sort of clarify all of that.
First of all, I don't think anybody would present me with anything bad because they know how much I love this country. Nobody's going to present me with anything bad. Number two, if I was, and of course you have to look at it because if you don't look at it, you're not going to know if it's bad. How are you going to know if it's bad? But of course you give it to the FBI or report it to the Attorney General or somebody like that. At the beginning, I think I said I'd do both. But how are you going to, if you don't hear what it is, you're not going to know what it is. I mean,
that's
how can
right.
you report
how
something?
How do you know it's bad
you
if you don't listen to it?
You're not going to know. Now, if I thought anything was incorrect or badly stated, I'd report it to the Attorney General, the FBI. Gee, if they say, we don't like your opponent, am I supposed to put, you know, the president of France, am I supposed to report him to the FBI? You know, I'm in a little bit of a different position than a lot of other people.
Mr. President, I think that's a good point, but what if that person, if a leader leaned over and just said, listen, this candidate that you're running against, he did some dicey things in XYZ country.
Nobody is going to say bad things to me. They know that I'm a very straight player. They know one thing about me. I love this country more than anything. I love this country. A lot of good things are happening. Things that they've been trying to get approved, Brian, for 25 years. I got them done in one day. I put the tariffs on, and we got them approved, and Mexico's been terrific.
If you did call the FBI with dirt on a political opponent, though, Mr. President, wouldn't the Democrats accuse you of using the FBI to investigate political opponents?
Oh, absolutely. Look, here's the bottom line. They spied in my...
So the president went on to then go down that road. That was on Fox and Friends. Before that, you heard him on Morning Joe, and before that, you heard ABC's George Stephanopoulos talking to the president. We're going to go into the WGN Radio newsroom. After the news, Jamie Calvin joins us, freelance journalist who covered extensively the Laquan McDonald shooting death. He is the producer of 16 Shots, a Showtime doc about that unbelievable story. He'll visit with us after the news. By the way, we were talking a little while ago about dreams that we've had, and I shared with you the dream that I was about to go on stage. I hadn't memorized lines. Then I thought in the dream, oh, this is a dream. I'm cool. Don't worry about that. And then I thought, oh, and then I sort of came to yet another layer of realization in the dream. And it was, no, John, this isn't a dream. This feels real. This really is happening. You really are about to go on stage for a major production, and you really don't know the words you have to say. And then I woke up. 224. John, as a teacher, I have that exact dream. I'm in front of the class. I have nothing planned. 312, I'm 55. I still dream I missed a high school class, and now I can't graduate. 815, I like Elif, the producer's idea. This is great sci-fi material. The idea being that your brain takes one tiny, it was chilling, Elif, your idea for the doc, for the TV show, whatever.
It just goes, oh, I'm going to take the worst thought she had all day, okay, and I'm going to use it tonight.
I'm going to torture her this evening.
Yeah.
That's kind of what happens sometimes. John, on my bright side, says 815, I had a dream that I met Jesus at a gathering, and he gave me a big hug. I was asking everyone, hey, am I alive? Bright side ever? I woke up, and I'm alive. And I got Jesus in my back corner. And 630 says, worst dream I ever had. I was a trustee for a lady a number of years ago. I dreamt that she came back, and she was really upset that I sold her house and distributed her assets according to her trust agreement. Whew! In the 2 o'clock hour, the bright side, you'll call in, tell us some good news, tell us why you're smiling. Today I watched a documentary called 16 Shots. It's a Showtime production produced by Jamie Calvin. He's that freelance journalist who a lot of people say is the seed for the revelation of the video of Laquan McDonald's shooting by Jason Van Dyke. He's in our studio. Welcome to the show. How are you?
It's good to be with you.
You agree with that? Were it not for your intrepid reporting, we never would have seen that video?
You know, I actually think there's another way to put it. If it wasn't for a whistleblower in law enforcement who reached out about a week after the incident with the information that what had been reported in the media, you know, was not at all what had happened, that in fact it was horrific. And that individual was the person who made known that there was dash cam video.
And made it known to you?
And made it known to me.
Called you, somebody in law enforcement?
Called a close colleague.
And who was that on the inside? Who's the deep throat on that?
I've never disclosed
you
the
identity. You do know who it is?
I do.
Is it a Chicago police officer?
I can't say.
Yeah. I've got a lot of questions about that, but maybe...
But I think it's, a lot of people have contributed over the course of this drama we've been engaged in the city. But I think that single individual, you subtract that person... And we'd never know the name. Laquan,
really, you think this would have gone away?
It would have gone away. I wouldn't have covered it. I mean, I get a lot of credit for the reporting, but it was only because I got the nudge.
Particularly because, as your documentary points out, Carol Marine and others said, we defer to the police. We believe them.
Yeah.
And we have so many stories like this. We can't track them all down. Somebody said, hey, I don't think that's what really happened. If you track down the truth on every single story of somebody being shot, well, it would be 50 last week. Nobody has the resources.
Nobody has the resources in terms of the reporting. And it's just really inherently difficult reporting.
Okay, so this is a revelation, though. Well, if we're going to play a couple of sound bites here, and you just referenced this. Jamie Calvin's in our studio, 16 Shots. Showtime, right?
Showtime.
Can I see that on TV right now?
You can see it tonight at 8 o'clock. That's the first airing of it.
So I saw a screener. Nobody else has seen it publicly.
We did a premiere last week.
Right.
With a big 450-seat auditorium full.
On TV, it'll be the first time tonight.
First time tonight. And then, you know, there'll be recurring opportunities.
It's 90 minutes well invested. Okay, so but think about this. This is how the mainstream media of Chicago, based on what they knew, first reported the death of Laquan McDonald.
Breaking news from Chicago's southwest side. A 17-year-old boy is shot and killed by police.
Chicago police say they had no choice but to shoot a 17-year-old boy who threatened them with a knife.
The teen suffered a gunshot wound to the chest. He was taken to Mount Sinai Hospital in critical condition, and that is where he died. Fraternal Order of Police spokesman Pat Camden says he lunged at one of them with the knife, and as soon as that happened, they shot him. Police say this was a clear-cut case of self-defense.
So why would anybody else look any further into it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the official narrative. And you read so you have Pat Camden, the spokesperson for the Fraternal Order of Police, on the scene. But if you read the press release that went out under the superintendent's letterhead within hours of the incident, at a time when they had multiple civilian and police witnesses to the shooting, they knew they had the videotape, and they knew they had it. The autopsy was performed the next morning, but it doesn't take a long time to count to 16 to determine the condition of the body. All that information that we have, you know, struggled over years to extract from the city, the police department and the city had, you know, within hours, if not minutes, of the incident.
So the cops knew all along.
The cops knew, there were 9 officers there and several officers who had behaved in exemplary fashion when they first got the call.
That
in the...
Yeah, sure. Yeah. They don't act aggressively, and Laquan was not acting aggressively. This thing was slowly defusing rather than escalating.
And they were doing, you know, so it's one thing that gets lost and we try to lift back up in the documentary. Is the initial police response was exactly what we would want it to be.
Yeah.
If you lived in that neighborhood, if Laquan was your child and was wandering around in a sort of dislocated state of mind, this is the way you'd want the police to respond. They, you know, had all the time in the world. They were patient. It was a law enforcement occasion, a young man with a knife wandering
around. But 9 police officers know that he shot multiple times. Maybe they know he was shot 16 times. Did their supervisors know that week how egregious the shooting was?
Within 24 hours, I believe the next day, the superintendent at the time, Gary McCarthy,
who spoke at length on this video to his everlasting dismay.
But they convened a meeting and they looked at the video.
They knew then.
And they found it a justified shooting.
They said it was a justified shooting. Does Gary McCarthy to this day say it's a justified shooting?
He does in the documentary.
He does. Afterwards or to the side, he said, well, this happens all the time. I said that, but what I really mean is this. He still stands by that?
He stands by that on the evidence of the documentary. I mean, I've certainly had other police officials pull me aside and say, you know, we know this was excessive. We acknowledge that this was excessive. But, you know, part of what I think is so tragic for the city is that we've had this process where to all appearances, Jason Van Dyke lost it. Other officers confronted with the same circumstances didn't shoot. The situation was completely under control. And the city and then the defense in the murder trial of Officer Van Dyke make the argument and go to great lengths, you know, using every possible strategy to make the argument that what we've all seen depicted in the video was lawful, justified within policy.
Because he was fearful for his life.
Because he was fearful for his life.
You know, it's also a revelation to me. You know, I followed this as closely as anybody. Not as you, but by and large, I was a good student of this case. There's a lot in here I didn't know and could not have seen before. One of them is, who is the African-American gentleman who got a call shortly after the shooting from, was it the coroner's office? No, it was the funeral home.
Yeah.
And they said, there's a lot of holes in this kid. That doesn't match the story. And he said, take pictures of the body.
That's Pastor Hunter, Marvin Hunter, who's the great uncle of Laquan McDonald. And he really has been the spokesperson for the family and has kind of moved the process for the family.
Another thing that disturbed me was, and I'd heard about them, but not as clearly as you documented them, the father and the son and the Hispanic woman who were witnesses to it. And here, Elif, let's play cut two, is that woman describing how she witnessed it. And then when the police stopped her and said, what did you see? This was her experience.
The more I kept telling them of what I saw, they were trying to make me... They would tell me stuff like, well, we're watching the video and your story does not match. And I said, well, if it doesn't match, then, and you have a video, what am I doing here? And they said, well, you know, it's not good to lie. They really wanted me to change the story about how many shots I had heard. If I didn't tell them what they wanted to hear, I definitely thought I was going to go to jail.
Amazing. So she and another witness were held for 3.5 hours, I believe.
She got out at 4 a.m.
and subjected to, you can't call it an interview or an interrogation by the police, to this kind of badgering.
Change your story.
You can't have seen what you think you
saw.
But
did the cops then report what she said? Was that in the official report?
No.
So you guys found her version of that, which was not coincident with what the police said she said.
Right. Yeah. So that's the, you know, and that's the story that the documentary really tries to tell, is all these different acts that were involved in maintaining a false narrative and that machinery. So, you know, it's too simple to call it a cover-up.
Well, but you ask Carol Maureen, not that she's the judge and jury, but she goes, yeah, I think this is a cover-up. I said, why did you preface that with, I think? What does a cover-up look like to you if it doesn't look like this? But Gary McCarthy says, I don't think it was a cover-up.
But I would make the distinction, you know, in some ways, if you define, I understand why people use the word cover-up, but if you define it narrowly, think President Nixon and Watergate, you know, it's... a small group of co-conspirators who do something wrong, know they've done something wrong, and then they compound it by falsifying, you know, suppressing information. And this was something I think, I almost wish it were a cover-up. This was standard operating procedure. Yeah. This was a machinery that has operated before. They had every expectation that it would operate this time. And for complicated reasons, it blew up.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about what Mayor Emanuel did. How long, by the way, we'll take a break and you can answer these questions, but give me a short answer to this. What was the time between October 20th, 2014, the night that Laquan was shot, and we released the tape, everybody saw?
It was about 13 months.
It
was November, late November of 2015. And I first published in February of 2015.
Okay. I want to talk about Mayor Emanuel's response to it. I want to talk about the trial and the reaction to the trial. This Showtime documentary runs about 90 minutes. It's called 16 Shots. You know why. It's the story of the death of Laquan McDonald and then the trial of Jason Van Dyke. I would say the first two-thirds of it are about Laquan and what happened, and then the last 20, 30 minutes are about the trial itself. More questions for Jamie Calvin. He's the journalist who covered it, who got the tips, who really push this thing forward. He is the producer of 16 Shots. 16 Shots, the Showtime documentary, which will premiere on TV tonight, about the shooting death of Laquan McDonald. Second-degree murder was the conviction of Jason Van Dyke, the police officer who pulled the trigger that many times. 16 times. 16 Shots is the title. I watched it today. Eric Zorn, a colleague of mine on the Mincing Rascals podcast, saw it too. He's writing about it. By the way, this is an aside that's not that relevant, but gorgeous cinematography of the city.
Yeah, I mean, the filmmakers, Rick Rowley and his team, are fabulous.
It really is the highest quality. I mean, it's beside the point, but the city looks beautiful. Or sinister, depending on what's happening. But you do certainly see Chicago, and it's a terrifically done film in every facet of the production. So finally, Mayor Emanuel then releases the tape, and the city shut down. I remember doors closed, locks locked, people getting dismissed early. You remember that, too.
It was an amazing moment.
Yeah. And then the announcement comes. So this was kind of an OJ moment, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that analysis?
Yeah. I mean, I think there I wasn't close to the OJ phenomena at the time, but... it's an extraordinary thing when an entire city, you were describing the footage of the city in the film, the city is a character in this film, And there have been, you know, several moments in the history we've all lived through over the last 4 years when virtually everybody in the city was focused on the same thing. The release of the video was one such moment, and the announcement of the verdict of second-degree murder was another.
So we were here in the studio when that happened, but people were gathered around radios, and there's a scene where there's a group. It could have been a mixed crowd, but I think I saw mostly black faces in this video of people literally gathered around a radio outside as the verdict is read in the courtroom.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Jason Van Dyke, guilty of second-degree murder.
What are we hearing there?
You're hearing incredible release of emotion. And when you see it on the film, you see people weeping, you know, with relief and amazement, a sense of something of great consequence occurring. And this is, you know, this is the first time a Chicago police officer has been found guilty of murder for an on-duty shooting of a civilian.
I've got a lot of notes about the movie here. We're out of time. And last comment from you about it.
Well, I think, you know, I think what we try to do in the movie is provide a perspective. There are a lot of different, you know, a lot of different perspectives. But, we, you know, we're at a kind of watershed moment in the city right now. You might even describe this as the first post-Laquan McDonald moment in, you know, these last 4.5 years, where sort of a new chapter is beginning, and the film kind of looks back on where we've been, and but also, you know, there's some sense of what lies ahead and the sort of continuing.
Are you hopeful?
I am hopeful in the sense that I never expected there to be an opening like this.
Because of Lori Lightfoot?
No, I mean, I certainly wish Lori Lightfoot well and her administration, but, you know, this, as turbulent as it's been, and as much controversy has swirled around this case, to have this kind of historic opening where we're talking about fundamental issues of racial justice, of police community, you know, relationships between the state.
You think
and
citizens. This is a game changer potentially?
I think it has been, in to the extent that we have an opportunity. We've all got to elevate our games to be worthy of the historical moment.
James Calvin, freelance journalist and producer of 16 Shots on TV tonight. What time is it broadcast?
8 o'clock in Chicago.
Congratulations. Really well done.
Thank you very much.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Friday.
Here's John Williams.
That means The Bright Side's about 30 minutes away. You call in, tell us some good news in your world. While you're smiling, we'll all smile.
Lord have mercy.
As if sunshine, blue skies, and 70s aren't enough. What's your good news? Half hour from now, hey, the weekend's here. The Bright Side's coming up. Thanks again to our last guest, Jamie Calvin, the journalist who covered the Laquan McDonald shooting and the Jason Van Dyke trial, the producer of the Showtime show that airs on TV tonight at 8 o'clock called 16 Shots. We played for you a clip from the show where the verdict is read and people cheer. 708 texted in, John, I know it's a terrible thing, this shooting and what happened. I don't deny that in any way, but it's so upsetting to hear all the cheers when that verdict was announced. This is a terrible, tragic thing. And I don't understand how anybody could cheer for any part of this. It's just awful. By the way, I want to give you a little trivia question here, and you can text in your answer. And Elif, let's give a prize to the first person with the right answer. I don't think I told you what the answer to this question is, but I will, because you have to screen. You have to screen the answers. Ready? Lapka, you can play if you want. One of every three patents in the 1890s was related to this. One of every three patents filed in the United States in the 1890s was related to this. One single thing. What was so hot that one of three patents in the United States was related to a thing? What was that thing? I read this and went, hokey smokes. I'm reading a really good book. I won't tell you what the book is yet because that'll give it away. But I'm reading this book and I thought, wow, this is an education. I'll educate you with the right answer and give you a prize if you already know it. before this hour is up. Text to 312-981-7200 if you think you know. Text to 312-981-7200 if you think you know. One of every three patents in the 1890s was related to blank. We'll give you a prize if you get it right. It's not a really big prize, but who doesn't like pizza? The Bright Side of Life comes your way in a half an hour. We've also got our Fun Things to Do segment. In the meantime, Tim Dittman joins us now. He's a reporter at the News Gazette, the paper in Urbana, and he has been covering a story that you've been seeing on the front page of the Tribune. We've been talking about it a little bit at WGN Radio, though it doesn't feel as much like a local story here as it is maybe a big story downstate and really a story of national significance. And that is the story of that Chinese scholar, the student at the University of Illinois, Yingying Zhang, who was in Urbana and she was studying. She was going to catch a bus. She didn't catch the bus. She was taking public transportation. Her English was pretty good, but she missed the connection as the bus was going away. She's running after the bus, and then a car pulls up and says, "Hey, did you miss your ride?" And she says, "Yes, I did." Guy says, "I'll give you a ride." And that was the last anybody ever saw of her. We now know that her death was a ghastly thing, and the man charged with the crime is on trial. And the defense tack they're taking is interesting. Following this story is Tim Dittman. Tim, thanks for joining us on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a very busy week down here, very heart-wrenching as well as these details come out at trial.
That's a fair description, though, is it not, of what happened? I mean, how she was abducted, if you will, and what led to her death?
Yeah, we expected a lot of new information to come out over these next few weeks, and the trial is expected to last into July. But I don't think anyone anticipated all of the bombshell information to come out on the first day. As you alluded to, the prosecution in their opening statement laid out their version of events, and I won't get into great detail on the air because, as you mentioned, they are very gruesome. But safe to say, Mr. Christensen abducted, did some terrible things to Ms. Zhang in his apartment and then ended her life. Now, when those comments were made, I was watching from actually the Urbana courthouse. So this trial is taking place in Peoria, but there is a viewing room at the Urbana courthouse for the local community who has an interest in the trial. I was watching from that Urbana courtroom, and the air was taken out of that viewing room. Everyone was just shocked to hear those details. Now, we didn't even anticipate what was going to come just a few minutes later when the lead defense attorney got up and said, "Mr. Christensen did commit this heinous crime, and he is the one responsible for Yingying Zhang's death. And over the next few weeks, we hope to present to you, the jury, facts about this man's life that you will give him a life in prison instead of the death penalty."
He didn't plead guilty, though.
He did not, and that's something that a lot of people have asked me about. So what has happened is not a formal guilty plea. It's more of a defense coming out and saying, here is what our trial strategy is going to be, which I'm not an attorney. I've only covered courts for about 8 years, but this is something that I have not seen happen very often, if at all. The fact that he has not pled guilty has led me to believe that there is not a formal plea offer on the table from prosecutors.
Right.
You have to remember,
right,
a plea deal is a two-way street. Prosecutors have to agree to it, and then the judge has to ultimately sign off on it.
It's kind of a moot point if, well, I guess it's not. We never know what's going to happen. But while Illinois has the death penalty, we've suspended executions, correct?
That's correct. Illinois, as a state, in state cases, does not do the death penalty anymore, but this is a federal case, and so the death penalty is still on the table.
So he could be executed for this crime.
He could be executed. It ultimately came down to Jeff Sessions when he was in office as Attorney General. He authorized the death penalty, and assuming Mr. Christensen is convicted of the main charge, which is kidnapping resulting in death, and again, barring some sort of mistrial or something unexpected did we all expect that to happen, given the fact that he has already admitted to doing it. Once that happens, the jury will deliberate, not the judge. The jury will decide if he gets life in prison or the death penalty. The jury has to be unanimous. If the jury is unanimous to say, yes, this man deserves to be put to death, he will be put to death. If even one juror says, no, I don't agree with that, then the sentence immediately becomes life in prison.
But that's all after, I guess it's a formality, but first they have to find him guilty of the crime. So you all are going through this trial knowing full well what the outcome is going to be. The defense says he's guilty, he did it.
That's exactly right. And over the next few weeks, prosecutors will try to bolster their argument for why the jury should sentence this man to death. And again, I have every indication, just reading the tea leaves, that prosecutors are not in a mode to take a last-minute plea deal. I think they want to see this case through and see the maximum punishment possible. And then on the defense side, they're going to try to present the exact opposite, to say why this man should not get the death penalty. And they've already kind of alluded to what they're going to talk about, the fact that this man at one time was a star student. He was pursuing his doctoral degree at the University of Illinois.
In physics?
I believe that's correct, yes. And at some point, he started failing his classes. He began drinking heavily. He became estranged from his wife. His wife actually got a new boyfriend. He got depression, and he became obsessed with murder and serial killers, Ted Bundy in particular. And ultimately, on June 9th, 2017, Brent Christensen's wife left for a rendezvous in Wisconsin with her new boyfriend, ironically to the same resort where Brent Christensen and his wife Michelle had their honeymoon. And according to the defense, that just set him off. He hit rock bottom, and he ultimately committed this heinous crime.
Right, so he hits rock bottom. And then what do you do when you hit rock bottom? You troll Urbana in a car. He couldn't get a previous woman to get in the car. You finally find this young Chinese student who does get in the car, naively thinking that nice man's going to give her a ride. And then you execute her in a terrible way. And you know, it's sort of to me like, I'm editorializing now, you're telling the story, but I could see you hitting rock bottom and doing something rash. But he in advance purchased a 6-foot-long duffel bag. For what purpose, right? I mean, it sure sounds premeditated to me, Tim.
Yeah, and prosecutors would probably agree with you that this is something that had been on the man's mind for several times. In fact, he had gone to the University of Illinois Counseling Center and told counselors there that he had been thinking about killing someone for a while. He had even bought supplies, the aforementioned duffel bag that you mentioned. So, yes, if you look at it in the most sinister light, this is a man who had planned to do something like this for some time. And on June 9th, 2017, some 2 years ago, he ultimately went over the ledge.
Yeah. And I understand that was a cry for help for him. I mean, he did tell counselors, I've thought about harming myself or other people. And then they suggested that he go to a mental health facility there. But, you know, the social service net that we have didn't catch this guy. And so we're left with this terrible crime. And this is something else that you alluded to a moment ago. At least I believe this is what you're talking about, Tim, that when at the trial, they told the jury the details of the crime. You can look it up if you want, but it's unconscionable what happened to this young woman. They did not know that it was going to be so specific and detailed, and that the family was there and was hearing some of this for the first time is, I guess, one of the things you were alluding to. That was startling, wasn't it?
It really was. And as far as we know, there was not some sort of jailhouse confession by Mr. Christensen. He more or less has been tight-lipped, aside from his initial interviews he did with the police in the days immediately following this incident. There are, however, several recordings that Brent Christensen's girlfriend, now keep in mind that's not his wife, he had an estranged wife and a girlfriend.
Yeah.
The girlfriend made several surreptitious recordings of Brent Christensen where he talked about the crime, and one in particular that's gotten a lot of publicity. Brent Christensen actually went on a memorial walk for Yingying Zhang, and while there made comments to the effect of, they're never going to find her. I'm very good at this, referring to committing a murder. So yes, it's all very startling. And back to your point about the family, they have a local attorney here who is kind of guiding them. He's an Urbana-based attorney who's been traveling with them to and from Peoria, where the trial is taking place, to kind of help them navigate the legal system, because this is all new for them. They're natives of China. And in speaking with that attorney, Steve Beckett is his name, he says the family is doing about as well as they can. The mother in particular, not this week, but at previous court hearings, has broken down crying a couple times. As you can imagine, it's very traumatic for her.
Yingying Zhang is that young lady's name, the victim. I'm out of time. You're doing good reporting down there, Tim. Let's wrap it up here, but maybe you could join us again next week. How long do you expect this thing's going to go?
We expect the prosecution to present their case through the end of next week. Then the defense will go. That will probably take about a week or so. And then it'll be the jury deliberating. And again, you don't want to put the cart before the horse, but we expect it to be a guilty verdict, given that he has already admitted to the crime.
Yeah.
They'll probably take a break for the 4th of July holiday, and then it'll be maybe a couple more weeks for the sentencing phase, where, again, each side will present their evidence to say, the prosecutors, here's why you should do the death penalty. The defense would say, no, here's why you should give this man life in prison. So we're looking at extending into July.
I frequently say, if you don't already, today would be a good day to subscribe to a newspaper. The News Gazette in Urbana, reporter there Tim Dittman. Tim, we'll be in touch. Thanks so much for your time today.
Sure, thanks for having me.
We appreciate you joining us. Okay, here's the answer. It says here, one in three patents in the 1890s was related to this. I said, text me in with your guess. Guns is wrong. Electricity, sewing machines, toilet paper, all wrong. The automobile, nope. Firearms, agriculture, mouse traps? Nope. Internal combustion engines? Hey, John, is it family planning? Nope. It was about the bicycle.
Can I guess?
David Jennings, go.
Electricity?
The bicycle.
Really?
The bicycle.
Okay.
Exactly. You're so disappointed. In fact, they said that in the 1890s, there were three big sports in the United States: boxing, baseball, and bicycling. And bicycling was attended by more people, was a bigger sport than boxing and baseball combined. We were a nation crazy for bicycling. The book I'm reading is about the world's fastest human. That's the title of it. And it is a story you cannot believe. So there's that detail.
You're talking about regular bicycles or motorized versions?
Motorized, the Greg LeMond type. You pedal. 847-650. Thank you. You're right. The bicycle, you and the pizza from Lou Malnati's. Okay, so let's just give a minute now to Laura Jansma. Laura, it's John Williams. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good. How are you?
It's good to talk to you folks again. Was it you or was it your husband I talked to last time?
It was myself. It's so good to hear from you.
You're the co-president of Sleep in Heavenly Peace. What does that group do?
We build bunk beds for kids that are currently sleeping on the floor or couches, just kids that don't have a bed.
Is this homeless children then, or kids who have a quote-unquote home, but it's bad enough where they are that they just don't have a soft surface?
Yeah, exactly, where they don't have a soft surface, and they just need a nice bed to sleep in at night.
How many kids go to bed each night not on a bed in our area?
In our area, it's over 5,000 kids that need a bed.
So your organization, literally, instead of Jimmy Carter building houses, you're cobbling together beds for people, huh?
Yep, exactly.
You're having an event tomorrow, right?
Yeah. Tomorrow is a national build day for Sleep in Heavenly Peace. So we're getting every chapter across the United States, well, most chapters across the United States, to build bunks on the same day to try and break records and, most of all, get as many kids that we can off the floor.
Yeah, no kidding. What age are we talking about, the kids that will get these beds?
Anywhere from 3 years old on up to 17.
It's just hard to imagine, isn't it, in a country as wealthy as ours?
It is. It's a shame. And a lot of us don't even know that there's a problem.
Where are you going to do this build?
Our specific Chicagoland build is tomorrow at the St. John, or the old Kmart in St. John parking lot. It's 9550 Wicker Avenue in St. John, Indiana.
Okay, so the Chicago area one is in St. John, Indiana.
It is, yeah, this one is.
Okay, fair enough. That's not that far away. What do you want us to do? Do you want us to show up, or is it too late now? You just need money? What can we do to help you?
Yeah, you guys can show up. It's going to be a good time, and most of all, it's our community getting together to build as many beds as we can. And we'll be there rain or shine. We got tents set up, music, you know, so it'll be a good time.
So you've got stacks of lumber, nail guns, hammers, saws, and all the supplies have been donated. Now you say, okay, guys, here's how you do it, and you'll show us how to do it, huh?
Yeah, we'll show you everything. We have everything supplied already. We just need you guys to come out and help us out so we can build as many beds as we can.
Springs and mattresses, too? I mean, are we going to assemble them that way?
Well, when we go on deliveries is when the mattresses and the comforters and all that will be put on the beds for them. But tomorrow it'll just be building bunk beds.
How do I sign up? Where do I go to get information about this?
We have an event on Facebook. It's Bunks Across America for Chicagoland Chapter. It's posted everywhere. You can go online to shpbeds.org and just find Chicagoland Chapter's event.
Got it. Okay, hold on. Stop right there. SHP, Sleep in Heavenly Peace. SHP, Sleep in Heavenly Peace. SHP.org. If I can remember that, I can go online. I can find out what I need to know, right?
Yeah, shpbeds.org.
Pardon me. Thank you. I'm trying to make it easy for people here. shpbeds.org. This is the Bunks Across America event tomorrow. Okay. Go. Everybody, if you can't go, give them a bunch of your money.
Comforters, pillows, whatever.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, they need those things. Who wants to sleep on a hard surface?
Exactly.
Laura Jansma. Come into our studio again sometime, Laura. But in the meantime, let's get folks to Indiana and help you guys out, okay?
Yes, thank you so much, John.
Okay, shpbeds.org. Laura Jansma and her family, and maybe yours too, are going to do a lot of good tomorrow. WGN Radio News comes up next. After that, fun things to do this weekend. Whoop, whoop, we got a good list. And then the bright side. It's 2:39 on WGN. Is this from their new album?
Yes, it is.
I love everything I've heard from this album I like. What are we listening to, Alec Harris?
Vampire Weekend. Will be playing at Huntington Bank Pavilion at Northerly Island. That's a mouthful. Sunday night at 6:30, and tickets start at $34 through pavilionnortherlyisland.com.
I say Northerly Island, but then Huntington Bank evidently paid a lot for naming rights.
Right.
And I never know then if it's the obligation of broadcasters and public personages to credit that, or you just say, hey, they're at Northerly Island.
You know what? I think it's up to the journalists and broadcasters.
And I, you know, if they pay money for it and that helps that be a viable place, then I think, okay, then I should honor that. Do you say, how do you describe where the White Sox play?
Guaranteed rate, the rate, Sox Park. It really changes.
Comiskey.
Depends on the mood.
I still, I'd probably say Comiskey as much as anything.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not to dismiss the people that paid a zillion dollars to have.
Right, but you know, it's the original home, you know?
You know, the funny thing is, boy, we're on a tangent now, but Wrigley Chewing Gum Company pays nothing for one of the most marquee addresses in sports. They don't pay anything for that. I don't know why the Ricketts haven't gone, we could sell that to somebody else, guys.
But interesting.
But they haven't done that. I mean, they're just letting that money sit on the table. And those people know how to monetize things. They have not monetized that. Vampire Weekend is at Huntington Bank Pavilion at Northerly Island. That does not roll off the tongues, does it, Ella?
Nope.
It's 6:30. Tickets start at $34. PavilionNortherlyIsland.com. All right, what else are we going to do this weekend, Lauren Lapkin?
Well, if you don't want to listen to Vampire Weekend, which you would be silly not to, there is Dead & Co. They're going to be at Wrigley this weekend.
So, Dead & Co?
Oh, yeah. And you know, there's a lot of deadheads out there And John Mayer's with them, so if you even just like John Mayer.
Two nights, and you'll see the people with the clothes. If you don't know that the Grateful Dead are in town, just walk around Wrigley. You'll see the clothes those people are wearing. Oh, Grateful Dead's in town. Buddy Guy's in town, plays Ravinia tonight at 6:30. They're going to open up the doors in about 45 minutes. The show starts, I don't know when the show starts, so sometime this evening. Tickets start at $43 for the lawn. Buddy Guy.
A lot of great music in Chicago this weekend, and food. So there's Ribfest Chicago. That's the big Chicago event this weekend that starts at 5 today, goes throughout the weekend on Lincoln Avenue. There is a suggested donation at the gate, but otherwise it's free. You got a lot of music, entertainment, and obviously plenty of good food.
Festa Pasta Vino is an Italian fest with Italian food and wine at West 24th and Oakley Street or Oakley Avenue. It goes on all weekend with live entertainment throughout each day. For more information, visit ArcadaLive.com. ArcadaLive.com. That's Festa Pasta Vino in Chicago.
Another big festival, but not downtown. Old Canal Days. That kicked off yesterday, and it goes through Sunday. It's over in Lockport on 10th Street. A bunch of music, carnivals, vendors, parade, a car show. Pretty much anything a festival can offer will be there this weekend.
Taste of Randolph Street Fest. 5 to 10 tonight. Tomorrow, noon to 10. Sunday, the same. It's on Randolph Street. There'll be daily live music acts, headliners like Corey Wong, Real Estate, and Holy Ghost. Entry is free. But they might ask for a donation, too. Randolph Street's going to put on food and music this weekend.
If you're feeling a little active this weekend, one of the runs going on is the Color Run Love Tour. That's Saturday morning at 8 at Soldier Field. You do have to register first, so make sure to go online to do that. And there's also a post-race festival, so that's always nice.
Having a wine fest in Schaumburg this weekend. Visit SchaumburgParkFoundation.org. And in Elgin, Ribfest is this weekend. $5 for the adults to get in. Ribs and music and food. ElginRibFest.com for that. I'll finish with this. The White Sox are home against the Yankees.
Oh, yeah. I'll be there Sunday.
It's Giolito tonight against CC Sabathia. Mm-hmm. That's just going to be fun. They had about 25,000 people at the park last night.
Yeah.
So glad to see the Sox come down from 4-love and win that thing 5-4. Thank you, Lurie Garcia and Tim Anderson. That was a fun game to watch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And they've been great to watch in general, but just those comebacks, man.
These kids are not intimidated by anybody, so they showed the White Sox, the Yankees, how to come from behind. Andy Mazur's got the pregame 6:40 tonight, and first pitch at 7:10. Yankees in town this weekend. Mm-hmm. Well, give me one more from you.
Scottish Festival in Itasca. That kicks or already kicked off today at 1, but goes all weekend or just about all weekend. A lot of Highland games and all things Scottish. I would love to actually check this out, but I probably won't be able to make it this weekend.
You know, let me mention this, too. So that's our Fun Things to Do segment that we call Fun Things to Do. Attention, potential sponsors. Your name could be on this. If I was Navy Pier, or if I was the somebody association of something or another, I would love to have my name on this. And every week we would promote their thing.
Right.
If you are that thing, call WGN Sales immediately. But in the meantime, it doesn't get any sweeter than this. Next Saturday, June 22nd, I'm going to be broadcasting live from Swedish Days in Geneva from 10 to noon. We're going to do our Swell Saturday show from 10 to noon in Geneva. We'll see you out there, Geneva. We're looking forward to it. Swedish Days has been a Geneva tradition for 70 years. Free admission and parking. Authentic Swedish fare. I keep wanting to hope they have Swedish fish there. Those little red candies.
Well, you can bring them, right?
I just imagine there'd be big jars of it gingerly scattered throughout the entire community.
Big fish bowls, maybe?
Yes, just bowls of Swedish fish. There's Taste of Sweden, carnival rides, research your Swedish ancestry, win a Volvo. I just threw in that last part. Visit the events page at WGNradio.com. For more details about our Saturday, June 22nd broadcast from Geneva. Okay, bright side now. Hey, and if you're on Facebook, are we a go yet? Okay, hi, Facebook. Wave hi to Facebook. Hi, Facebook.
Hi, Facebook.
We're live streaming on Facebook. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. Not only will you get to see us, but look at that swell trophy we got from the Illinois Broadcasters Association. Our mincing rascals, Mr. Poe is now showing it to our Facebook streamers. The Mincing Rascals won the best podcast in the state of Illinois from the Illinois Broadcasters Association last night. Sarah was there picking up the trophy, and she brought it into our Swell studio. Call now, 312, or text 312-981-7200. Time for The Bright Side. So we play this little song.
Some things in life are bad.
Are you a whistler?
Really make you
I am, but not necessarily always on cue.
Make you swear and
Kevin's not here today,
no.
So
when you're chewing on
you want to do the whistling or shall I?
I can attempt. I'll attempt when you attempt.
All right, you go first. Here okay. We go. 312.
Whistle, help things turn out for the bad.
Elif, do you know how to whistle?
Yeah.
All right, here comes. Let's let Elif do it.
Okay.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Okay. I fooled you.
Look on the bright side of life.
Wapka, go.
Oh, Kevin needs to be here.
I know. Well, Kevin's always very critical of his ability to whistle, but I had no idea he was that good because judging by the two of you, he's got game.
No, no, no. We're just really bad.
Here we go. Now everybody sing.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Elif is a good singer. Mm-hmm. All evidence to the contrary. Here's the number to call. 312-981-7200. Oh, hello, Facebook. 312-981-7200. Call or text.
For life is quite absurd.
We're live streaming this, by the way. And so Elif will read your Facebook posts. Lapka will do the text. I'll take some phone calls. Let's start with Karen. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling today, Karen? You're on the air.
I just graduated, two daughters, debt-free, both gainfully employed and off my payroll.
Wow.
Always look on the right side of life.
Carl, why are you smiling? You're on WGN.
Hey, John. How you doing? Great weather today. Hey, John, I got a brand new mattress. Haven't had one in a long time. And I think it's one of your sponsors.
If life seems jolly.
He just cut out, but I hope it is one of our sponsors. And if not, let's pretend that it was. And now we go to line four, where Jay is standing by. Jay, why are you happy today?
It's been 1 week since I've been separated from my wife, and I'm still happy.
If it's making you happy, it makes us happy. There's only one rule for the bright side. We don't judge other people's happiness. Mm-hmm. What are you reading at 312-981-7200?
I really love this one. 630 sent in a picture. They said they got this for 50% off. It is a box that says, always look on the bright side of life.
Very nice. Very nice. Got another one you like?
I do. We have 815. My bright side is that I'll be able to celebrate my dad's 93rd birthday with him and my 89-year-old mother on Monday. And that's great because they've just been home from hospice care after being in there since March 9th.
Wow.
Always look on the right side of life.
Hey, Patricia, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
I just went to my daughter's ultrasound appointment yesterday, and at 31 weeks, I got to see the face of Aiden Patrick, whose cheeks are so chubby, I'll pinch him forever.
All right, read us another one.
Okay, this one gave me a good chuckle. 708, my bright side is karma. Fiance was rear-ended the other day, driver kept going, but his license plate number is embedded in her bumper. He'll be caught.
Wow. Hey, Mark, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, sir?
Oh, today is the second Friday of my retirement, John. I tried getting through last week, couldn't make it. And or as some of my coworkers tell me, this is my 11th Saturday in a row.
Yeah, no kidding. And how is that? I fear retirement and long for it. Is it going good?
I feared it, too, and it is going great.
All right, Lapka, go.
630, giving my 2 weeks at a job to go to a better company for more money. Congratulations on that one.
Elif Garris, are you going to read any of the Brightside Facebook posters?
Yeah, I've got Jennifer who says that now that school's out, I get to spend more time with my dog.
Very nice, very nice.
And then I have, from Chuck. My bright side is that it's Friday, and I just took 3 bags of canned goods from my kitchen to the local food pantry, and that's a good feeling to help others in need.
Now, boy, aww. Chuck, good for you. Let's talk to Catherine. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Catherine? You're on the air.
My three boys are together on a European vacation. They call it the Ugly American Tour, but I'm sure they're behaving themselves beautifully.
So are you glad that they're having fun, or are you glad that they're out of your house?
Oh, no, they're two were in the service, 4 and 5 years, and the fourth one's been on its own for a while, or the third one's been on its own for 4 years.
Ah.
So I'm just so happy for them.
What a nice idea.
Such a great time.
Yeah, no kidding. That they enjoy each other's time and all. Nice call. Good, Catherine. You raised them right. Lauren Lapka, go.
630, my bright side is just got home from their first vacation in 8 years, so they're especially refreshed.
Yeah, I suppose they deserve it. Hey, Larry, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Lair?
I'm smiling because it's the last day of laying on my side for 50 minutes an hour, 8 days after detached retina surgery.
Uh-oh.
You heard my story, too, didn't you?
I did. I heard it this morning.
You know, and so when you get a detached retina, I had that happen to me about a week ago. I was lucky. I didn't have to do it. But for a lot of people, you got to lay face down 22 hours a day for a week to 2 weeks to let that thing heal. It's the craziest thing. You made it through it, Larry.
Yeah, 2 hours, about 5 more hours, and we're done.
So wait a minute. Are you laying face down right now?
No, I've been laying on my side, on my right side, because it was a left eye for 50 minutes an hour for 8 days.
So, but you still got 5 more hours to go?
Yeah, my wife won't let me cheat.
Yeah, don't cheat and hang up the phone, damn it. I don't want to hurt your eye, sir.
Okay.
Bye, Larry. Congrats, bye. Attaboy. Lauren Lapka, go.
224 Brightside. I played hooky from work this afternoon and haven't been caught yet.
Elif Garris is our producer. She's monitoring the Facebook feed. Hey, Elif.
Yes.
You got another one for us?
I do. I just lost it.
Okay.
Oh, wait. I got it.
Okay.
I have Chris saying, my 49-year-old daughter, whom I gave up for adoption, is going to meet her half-brother tonight.
Wow. Wow.
I also have the winners of those pins.
We've got them from our friends at the Joint Relief Institute. Oh, that's right. We got to start giving away some Brightside pins. So who's going to get the pins?
Well, I have Marianne Nyberg, Duane Perkinson, Deb Jamrose, Chris Thomas, and Dina Orsini-Walker.
Congratulations all.
I'll just read one, though.
Okay.
Deb Jamrose found a dresser that says, always look on the bright side of life, for
$49.99.
Ooh. Hey, Rich, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
And my bright side is I'm owning my first business for the first time in 53 years. Tomorrow's my birthday, and I'm opening a CBD business.
Wow.
To help people with pain.
You are going to make money. You know what? I'm going to give you all 5 of my Bright Side of Life pins and share them with your customers, okay?
Okay.
Be a bonus. What's the name of your
hemp.
CBD business going to be?
Poppy Pops Healthy Hemp.
Healthy Hemp, I think he said.
Give it to
the second part.
Do it again.
Poppy Pops Healthy Hemp.
Okay.
Poppy Pops Healthy Hemp. Okay, got it.
All right, hold on. Talk to producer Elif. And if you don't know what CBD is, you will soon, because mm-hmm. that's a going concern. Okay, thank you, Facebook. Thank you all. Thank you, our friends from the Joint Relief Institute, for giving us the Bright Side of Life pins. Lauren Lapka, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
That's our Bright Side segment. We do it on Fridays.
Hi there, John. We've got Justin Kaufman
yes.
in today.
Studio A.
Rose off this Friday. One quick bright side. My nephew Lars graduated from 8th grade today. Congrats to you.
Oh,
it's
that's
cool
great.
To be out there
What's this young man's name? Lars?
Lars, yeah.
Lars.
My little nephew Lars.
I love that name,
he goes
Lars.
To Hawthorne Scholastic Academy over by the Wrigley area over there.
Way to go, Lars.
You know.
Over by the Wrigley.
Over there. You know that area. You used to live there, John.
I still do.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's a great area. You know.
Yeah, it is. And you know, the nice thing is, somebody said this to me the other day. I said, hey, we live near Wrigley Field. And the lady looks at me and goes, do they pee on your lawn?
And you're like, yes, they do.
And I said, I thought they would. But it's on my street. It's lovely. It's a well-behaved street. So thank you, everybody, for not peeing. That's
thank
my
you.
Bright side.
That's hey. A great bright side. There is no pee currently on your block.
Hey,
yeah. Not on my lawn.
John, are you getting any VIP passes for Swedish dates? Because I'd come down for that.
Hmm.
Are you being sarcastic now?
No, I love Swedish dates.
I've never
Geneva.
Been to Swedish
oh,
dates.
Oh, you've never
I love
been.
Geneva. I love that area.
Oh, man.
Are you coming out for our remote on Tuesday at John Barleycorn?
Oh, no kidding.
That's yep. right by your house.
That's
yeah.
not far.
Shoot, I could walk there.
Mm-hmm. We'll see you Tuesday.
Okay, I'll come to that and then I'll come pee on my lawn.
Coming up on the show,
yes.
We've got Demetrius Ivory talking about your Father's Day weekend as people try to make all their plans. That's Lauren Lapka breaks down all the festivals, including the Swedish festival, I'm sure, is on her list. And Ryan Burrow talks about Lake Michigan water levels. And
I have noticed
this. Have you noticed?
Oh, well, you know, so just think about this. Along the lake, they've got this concrete apron that you can ride your bike, jog, walk your dog, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's underwater.
It's closed, yeah.
Some piers that people traditionally use are underwater, right? Water along the Lake Michigan shoreline. And also, all that May rain is bringing a lot of June mosquitoes, apparently. So something to watch out for. The fired meteorologist in Springfield continues to be a story. 15,000 people are on his case trying to get him rehired down there.
Is he coming on your show?
Well,
I hope not.
Well, I know everyone's been trying, and he does have a ties to our station, but we'll see. We'll see. We're going to have somebody talk
about that's
it.
Right, because he went to school with or was a roommate
Of Steve Grzanich
in the morning.
Yes, it said he's a really nice guy, which is what everyone's saying on his Facebook page, that he was just doing the right thing. Why, oh, why did this happen?
I sent him an email yesterday.
Good
and
for
I
you.
I almost literally said, don't go on Ro's show. Come on mine.
Oh, I knew it. We're going to talk to him. So we'll be rubbing it in.
All right, have a good show.